The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. Coming up on the show, I'll be talking with one of the two artistic directors of Ragamala Dance, an Indian dance company. Actually, it's an American Indian dance company, not to be confused with a dance company of American Indians, but that's a bit confusing. Folks, second generation from India, they are giving a concert called Sacred Earth Wednesday at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. In fact, both of our conversations today have to do with events at Krannert Center. The first one is an evening with Mandy Patinkin and Nathan Gunn. Mandy Patinkin, the Tony Award-winning Broadway actor and also actor of television and film and so on, and Nathan Gunn, the opera star, who happens to be a faculty member at the University of Illinois here in Urbana as well. And they're performing a show together on Saturday at the Krannert Center at 7:30. And I'll be talking with Mandy Patinkin in just a few moments here on Live and Local. Stay tuned.
My father told me, Chip, my boy, there'll come a time when you leave home. If you should ever hit New York, be sure to see the Hippodrome.
The Hippodrome.
The Hippodrome.
Did I hear right? Did you say the Hippodrome? Go to my place.
Go to Rubens.
Go to my place.
Go to Macy's.
Go to my place.
The Roxy.
Go to my place.
Automat.
My place.
Gimbals.
My place.
Flatiron.
My place.
Building.
My place.
Hippodrome.
My place.
You just heard music from Leonard Bernstein's On the Town, Come Up to My Place. It was recorded in 1995 from a CD called Bernstein's New York, and it featured Judy Blazer and, for the purposes of this conversation here on Live and Local, Mandy Patinkin. He's going to be with Nathan Gunn on an evening with Mandy Patinkin and Nathan Gunn on Saturday at 7:30 at the Fullinger Great Hall at the Krannert Center in Urbana, and he's on the phone with me right now. Thanks very much for joining us. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So I got to ask you, when did you get in the habit of singing with opera singers? This is not the first time by any means.
No, it makes me relax because I'm never going to sing as good as they can, so I could just relax and croak my way through the evening and not feel like I got to worry. But I had the privilege of sharing a dressing room with Nathan when we did Stephen Sondheim's 80th birthday concert at Lincoln Center at Avery Fisher Hall with the New York Philharmonic. And we were up on the top floor of the Phil, sharing a dressing room and a closet, sort of. And we just had a great time talking to each other. And we really hit it off. I thought he was a wonderful human being, obviously a phenomenally gifted talent. And I brought up the idea of what about doing something together, because he's already crossed over into my world, and I said I was interested in the world of opera. I don't know much about it, and figured if we were together, maybe I'd learn. So he said, boy, I'd do that in a heartbeat. So we just set about collecting material from both of our lives, and then we just put together an evening, to make a long story short, and we've been just messing around with it. We change it every now and then, and we just hope to keep doing it and keep changing and adding new material and having fun.
So when was the dressing room incident, so to speak, and how long you've been doing the show then?
I don't remember. I don't have the calendar in front of me. I think it was about a year or so, year and a half ago or so. Whenever Stephen Sondheim's 80th birthday was, I could look it up on my phone, but then I'm sure I'd screw up the phone call.
No, that's fine. I've got the range. I just wasn't sure how long that was. So this is
it's
a pretty new show.
Yeah, probably somewhere within the last year and a half or two, and. And that's when that happened. And then we've just been, you know, trying to find time in our crazy schedules where we can get together and do this. That's the tricky part, because in the opera world that he lives in, they book their lives 5 years in advance. And then I'm shooting a television series, and then I have my own concert life solo and with Patti LuPone and other people that I work with. And so, you know, our lives are scheduled, and we just give it all to the bookers and try to let them figure it out.
Well, I'm glad they figured it out to include us. I wanted to ask you about some of your early start, because you started really on the theatrical side and the music came in later, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, actually, no. It was the other way around. I started off on the south side of Chicago at Congregation Road Phasetic, where I was in synagogue every day since I was 7 or 6 years old in Hebrew school. And at 7 years old, I ended up in the boys' choir. and then the family choir. Every Saturday morning I was in the boys' choir, and every Friday night I was in the family choir. And I did that till I was 14 years old. So music was my first influence in anything. I really think I just breathed it in every day in the temple. And I loved it so. And then while I was in high school, my mother suggested that I go audition for a play at the Young Men's Jewish Council Youth Center, where I started doing plays like Carousel and West Side Story and other plays, and I fell in love with it. It really rescued me from a high school experience that wasn't very pleasurable. I wasn't enjoying high school because it didn't have things that spoke to me. And so my life was born in both in the synagogue and then at the Young Men's Jewish Council Youth Center doing musical comedy. And if you thought, you know, I never would have thought my life would have ended up in musical comedy, but it's a huge part of my life. You know, the songs and thoughts, ideas and prayers that people like Stephen Sondheim and Yip Harburg and Rodgers and Hammerstein and Irving Berlin and Randy Newman and Paul Simon and Adam Gettle all write, and I get to sing them and say them every day, and they just fill my heart and soul, and they're sort of like a roadmap for me to live by.
What did you do? What was your major in at college?
My major was in finding out how to stay out of classes.
Hey, there's lots of people like you that way.
I know. I signed up for 18 hours. I went to the University of Kansas my first year. I signed up for 18 hours of courses, and by the time the semester was over, I think I was taking two, which was an English class because I was able to get my theme papers from a girl that I was dating from her sorority files. Because of all the rest of the time I was at the theater working on plays. And so while I was there, the chancellor of the university came to see a play, and there was a famous football player there also. I forget his name, but the University of Kansas, who became a very famous quarterback. And he said, you know, look, I went to see you in this play, and I see him play football every weekend, and you're both, we're very proud to have you both here, but you both have a similar problem that I have to talk to you both about. You're not taking any classes. And as the chancellor of this university, it's my job to try to get you to attend some of these classes. How can we do that? And I said, I don't have a clue. I've been trying since I got here. It just doesn't work out for me. He said, well, what about, why don't we look into some professional schools where you can do what you love to do full time? And then we began looking at places, and I auditioned for the Goodman School of Drama in Chicago and the Juilliard School of Drama in New York. And I decided to grab New York because, like most kids, I wanted to get as far away from home as I could at the time. And Champaign-Urbana was too close to home. Goodman was too close to home. And so I flew to New York and went to school there.
And at that point, you were focusing on all kinds of theater, both the musical side and not?
It was a classical theater training program started by John Houseman. There was no music from, I mean, Juilliard is famous for music, but I didn't sing a note of music at Juilliard. I studied classical theater. I studied to be a classical actor, just Shakespeare, Ibsen, Chekhov, Webster, all the great dramatists of time, you know, Williams, Arthur Miller, and those are the plays we worked on. William Hurt, whose name is Bill Hurt, and when he became a movie star, he called himself William, but... And he was my dear friend and classmate, still is, and we were in class together, and that's where we learned. And my teacher and mentor was and always will be Gerald Friedman, who became the dean of the school of the University of North Carolina School of the Arts, and he taught me how to go about my craft. And it's the same craft I use whether I'm in front of a microphone singing a song on stage in a concert with Nathan, by myself with Patti LuPone, or if I'm doing a TV show or if I'm filming a movie. It's the same way to figure out what I'm saying and who I'm saying it to.
Well, I think it was the Juilliard thing that got me the idea that, you know, you started more or less in straight plays, so to speak. I've seen you in different capacities, of course, many times on television, mostly in musical sorts of things, and then television with some of the dramas and so on. And you're a wonderful dramatic actor, and I don't want to say that there's any reason that should be a surprise, except somehow I mostly think of you on the musical side, and you've got these concert things that you started doing about in 1989.
Yeah, that's about when we started at the Public Theater, Joseph Pfaff's Public Theater, and we made this first album just called Mandy Patinkin, and then the question was, after we made the album, what do we do with the songs? Just put them in a drawer, and the Schuberts wanted me to go on Broadway with a big orchestra and wear a tuxedo and all that stuff. I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to sing with an upright piano and do it the way I do it at home, and Joe Pfaff wanted me to play Leontes in Shakespeare's Winter's Tale, and he came over for a Shabbos dinner one night, and I said to him, well, the Schuberts want me to do it this way. I don't want to do it that way, and I want to do this music. He said, well, he didn't ask me. He said, why don't you do Shakespeare's Winter's Tale, play Leontes for 8 weeks. You'll have 8 Monday nights off, and on those 8 Monday nights off, you can do your little music thing. See how it works out. And so Joe gave me those Monday nights off. I went out there the first Monday night on the Shakespeare set with Paul Ford, my piano player, and we've been doing it for 23 or 24 years ever since.
Do you have to? I know you said that you take the same dramatic approach to whether you're doing just a stage play or a television show or a musical or so on, but do you have to do different kinds of mental preparation, particularly if you're going back and forth that quickly between a concert thing and a stage thing?
Yeah, I mean the craft is really just to, and forgive me, I'm not trying to be pretentious with the word, but it's just to try to find ways to connect. Connect to the words I'm saying, the thoughts that are in the material that I'm speaking about, or the person I'm with or who I'm listening to or what I'm hearing, or just the silence. To connect to the silence is often the most powerful thing I experience. In terms of the different venues that I work in, whether it be concert or stage or screen or films, I go over material all the time. I just came from the gym before I talked to you. I run a concert of about an hour and a half every day in the gym because I have 10, 12 hours of material in my head all the time of just songs that I have to go through. And if I'm working on a TV show, like right now I'm shooting a show called Homeland for Showtime, and we go back into production again early May. So the end of April, I'll start getting those scripts. And so then I have to share my time because I have to spend a certain, I'm not 10 years old anymore. I have to spend a little more time working on those lines than the younger kids in the company. And so I have to drill them for, 5 to 7 days, night and day, over and over and over again, till I can forget about them and just live them. Because the idea for me is to get out there and just forget about it. And go out there and just, as my wife always says to me, Mandy, you've done this work. Now, you've done the work. Now just go out there, listen to the words, and see where they take you.
Well,
so that's my goal, to just try to be free to listen.
Well, speaking of words and listening, I didn't even realize we had one of your early CDs here called A Mandy Patinkin Experiment from 1994. And the very first song on here, I didn't even realize that it was what it was because I was just not paying attention. And the lead in, as so often happens with songs, was not the part I recognized. And then the phrase, as time goes by, showed up.
Yeah.
And I was really taken with this song and your whole delivery of it. What was your, how do you choose songs that you decide to sing in a concert?
Well, Paul Ford, who's my collaborator and piano player, he's like the Library of Congress when it comes to this genre of musical literature. He knows it all, both film music and show music and all the lyrics. And ever since Sunday in the Park with George, he's been Steve Sondheim's right-hand man. He's almost like his personal mental computer. And I met Paul when we were working on the on Sunday in the Park with George with Steve Sondheim and James LaPlante. And we go through hundreds of songs over the years. We just go through lots and lots of material. And right now I'm working on a new show with a person named Taylor Mack. You can go to taylormack.com and see him. He's an amazing artist. We're putting a show together, and we work on the Patty Mandy show, the Patty Evening with Patty LuPone and Mandy Patinkin, or whoever I'm working with, my son Gideon or Nathan Gunn. It just adds more and more songs to the pile of literature. And then if we're looking at this song and then this triggers us in a certain way, and then we say to each other, it'd be nice if we had something like this or like that or something that spoke to this idea or moved this idea forward. And then Paul or Nathan or Patty or whoever I'm working with will come up with 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 more ideas. And then that pile just keeps growing. We listen to them, we learn them, and then we see which ones stick. And oftentimes the ones that we put in the discard pile, they come back to visit us a few years later because for whatever reason, it didn't talk to me today, but it talks to me tomorrow.
Well, this one sure talked to me. So here's As Time Goes By. It's from the Mandy Patinkin Experiment in 1994. Mandy Patinkin, my guest here on Live and Local, as he's going to be with Nathan Gunn at the Krannert Center in Urbana for a show on Saturday night.
This day and age we're living in gives cause for apprehension with speed and new invention and words like third dimension. Yet we get a trifle weary. Come lovers, as time goes by.
It's called As Time Goes By, featured Mandy Patinkin here on Live and Local. And he's with me on the phone right now. They're doing the show featuring himself and Nathan Gunn and also the pianist he's mentioned already, Paul Ford, and Nathan's wife, Julie Jordan Gunn. I had a question for you that I've always wondered from when I ever heard you sing. A big part of your characteristic sound is you have this sort of, you do a lot in head voice falsetto, and I'm wondering how you adopted that as a pretty predominant part of the singing that you do. You also have a wonderful baritone that you pop into every once in a while, but a lot of it's in that upper range.
Well, part of the reason is I don't read music, and I'm sort of a musical idiot, so I'll try anything as a result. There's nothing that I won't say that I can't try. And I started singing that way in high school, and I had a high school music teacher whose name, wonderful lady named Lena McClynn. And I'll never forget one day I sang that way, and I didn't want to sing like a big sound like opera singers make or whatever. She asked me to sing something, and I wanted to just sing the way I felt, and it came out in this little high, kind of like a boy soprano almost, but I was already, you know, past puberty. My voice had changed, but I still retained this ability to sing in what some people call a falsetto. I don't know. It doesn't feel falsetto to me. It just feels, you know, like a higher, relaxed voice. And I thought I was going to get yelled at for doing it. And she looked at me and she said, "Child, you sing that way anytime you want. And anybody tells you you shouldn't do that, you just come tell them, talk to Lena." And so I said, "Okay." And then it just gave me, she gave me the confidence to feel like I could sing that way. And that was it. And then I, as the years went on, when I sing with Nathan, sometimes it brings out a stronger sound in me, or with Patty. But my voice, you know, your voice changes. Gravity has its effects on us as we go down the road. But, you know, my favorite singer of all time is Tom Waits and Satchmo. And those guys, you know, they live in a gravel pit. But they bleed soul. And that's all I long for, is to have my soul come out somehow in those words that these gifted men and women wrote. You know, they wrote these thoughts and wishes for themselves and for the world that a lot of them couldn't even find a way to live for themselves, but they left them there as prayers for the rest of us. And I love them.
Well, speaking of things personal and singing from your soul, we're going back to Leonard Bernstein again, but a completely different from usual take on his song Maria from West Side Story. This is from your show called Mama Lotion, a recording in 1998, and you sing this song in Yiddish. What was the thinking behind this particular show? And do you still do this show?
Well, not only that, but Nathan and I do it together, and he sings it in English, and I sing it in Yiddish, and we do it at the same time, and it's one of my favorite things of the whole evening.
It
really soars and flies. And the way it all came about was when I put together my Yiddish album, which is called Mama Lushin. It had Eastern European songs and songs from the Holocaust and pre-Holocaust and the Holocaust and Tin Pan Alley and the Yiddish theater, and it was missing something. And I realized the thing that it was missing were all the ancestors, were all the descendants of those ancestors, people like Yip Harburg and Steve Sondheim and Rodgers and Hammerstein and Irving Berlin, whose ancestors were all, many of them like Yip Harburg, were cantors and they came from that world of Eastern European music, Paul Simon, and yet they wrote the songs in English. Irving Berlin, whose first language was Yiddish, never wrote a single Yiddish song. So we took songs that he made famous and other people, like God Bless America and White Christmas, and I translated them into Yiddish and Steve Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein, whose ancestors were from Eastern Europe. I took some of their stuff and I translated into Yiddish. And Paul Simon, the American tune, I turned into Yiddish. And when I did that, I felt that we'd come full circle and we'd made a journey more interesting.
Well, here it is. It's Maria Allah Manny Patinkin in Yiddish from 1998. Mama Lotion is the CD and the show that he does, and he'll be with Nathan Gunn at the Krannert Center in Urbana on Saturday night.
Mein Jahr erkennt ob ich sich mit meiner
It's Maria from West Side Story, music by Leonard Bernstein, sung by Manny Patinkin, and you can hear that with Mandy and with Nathan Gunn on Saturday night as they do a joint show at the Krannert Center in Urbana. You've mentioned Sondheim a number of times, and you've often been very closely associated with his music, and I wondered what is your relationship to that music? Why is it that you feel so close to Sondheim's music, and how is it that it seems to have become such a prominent part of your acting career?
Well, I'm a lyrically driven person. The music, I've always felt, never failed the lyrics if the lyrics told a good story, whether the music was written by Steve Sondheim or Irving Berlin or Rodgers and Hammerstein. Always I felt the music equaled great words, and Stephen happens to do both. He writes great music and great lyrics. But it's his lyrics, most of all, that speak to me. If I could write, I'd write what he had to say. I can't speak for him and say that this is what he would say, but I do feel that there's a tremendous quality that we share, which is that it's an attempt to turn any darkness in our life into light and to use the battlefield of the stage or the arena of the stage and the tapestry and canvas of music and lyrics and song to run on that field and to get from the dark area to the light. And that's what I feel Shakespeare's life was about, turning darkness into light. That's what I feel Stephen's life is about, turning darkness into light. And that's what my life is about, and that is the struggle I live to learn and to practice every day. And he gives me the best Bible to do with life.
And I assume there'll be some Sondheim in the Saturday show along with Nathan.
Oh, there always is, and everything I do is, I can't live without him.
You did a CD in 2002 called Manny Patinkin Sings Sondheim, and I wonder if you happen to have any a single favorite off of that CD.
I have no single favorites. I really, he is such an amazing artist, and he says such a vast amount of thought, feeling, and knowledge, and simple thoughts of just how to not be so complicated, just how to have fun. He talks about it all, and so I love everything of his that I sing. There's nothing that I love more than something else. I tell you, it's one of the great miracles of my life that this music came into it, and then the fact that he's alive and that I'm alive and that I get to know him and meet him and talk with him occasionally and have fun and emails and correspondence and collaborations is mind-boggling to me. It's like living in Shakespeare's time, only I'm living in Sondheim's time, and I get to be part of his company.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to somebody who's got such a close relationship with so many people in the theatrical and the Broadway world. So I'll choose the song because the title probably says something about you. It's called Broadway Baby, and it comes from Follies, music by Stephen Sondheim, sung by Manny Patinkin. He will be with baritone Nathan Gunn in a show they're doing together at the Krannert Center in Urbana Saturday night. Thank you very much for joining us on Live and Local.
Thank you. Have a great time, and we'll see you at the theater. Come see Nathan. Come see me. Come see us.
Thank you. just a Broadway baby, walking off my tired.
Mandy Patinkin and Stephen Sondheim's Broadway Baby from the musical Follies. He will be joined by baritone Nathan Gunn at the Krannert Center in Urbana for a show on Saturday at 7:30. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from... Yes, it is. From these business partners, Risk Management Commodities of Lafayette, Indiana, Milo's in Urbana, and Escobar's in Champaign, Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign. These business partners join the Friends of WYLL in making great programs possible, and we thank you very much for your support. How does one come home from war, injured physically and psychologically, and build a life anew? In Hell and Back Again, our next community cinema, two overlapping narratives are intercut, creating both a dreamlike quality and a strikingly realistic depiction of how Marines experience this war. The free public screening is at the main Champaign Public Library, Tuesday, April 3rd, from 6 to 8:30 p.m. Coming up, I'll be, in just a minute or two, I'll be talking with one of the two artistic directors of a company called Ragamala Dance. They're presenting a show called A Sacred Earth, also at the Krannert Center. That'll be Wednesday evening at 7:30. My guest on this portion of Live and Local is Rani Ramaswamy, who is artistic director for Ragamala Dance, who are going to be presenting a program called Sacred Earth at the Krannert Center in Urbana on Wednesday evening at 7:30. And I appreciate your joining us very much on the show. So the first question has to do with the name. What does the word or term Ragamala mean?
Ragamala. Raga is musical modes in classical Indian music, and mala means garland. So it's a garland of ragas. Our first piece that production that Ragamala did was to, you know, Ragamala has, these are old paintings where it, Muslim artists gave vision to Hindu musical modes. So they were miniature paintings under which each of the raga description, they were divided into families as male, female, you know, children and so on. And poets wrote underneath these tiny miniature paintings describing these characters of the ragas or raginis. So in our first production, we had the miniature paintings commissioned and blown up as large-scale backdrops without the figures, and we became the figures. So, and that was our first production, and we did six different ragas, which are ragamalas, garland of ragas. And so after that, we created the, that was our first piece, so we titled our company Ragamala Dance. Music is very important to our, you know, all our productions. So our work is very closely related to the music that we choose, so we decided to go with that name.
So how long ago was that first production?
20 years.
Oh, so the, you've been
it is our 20th anniversary this year.
Well, congratulations for making it that
Thank
long.
Thank you.
And the show that you're doing this week is also involving, obviously, the visual with the dance, but also the visual in forms not completely unlike what you just described as belonging to the ragas.
In this particular performance, we are actually using two folk art traditions, visual art traditions, and we are inspired by that to use classical music and classical dance. Now, in the first piece, the music was North Indian and the dance was South Indian. Here, the music is South Indian, the dance is South Indian, but the two art forms that we are using and which we are the philosophy behind which we are inspired by, one comes from the south and one comes from the northwestern part of India.
So talk about those two, because they're quite different, except that they both at least began as quite impermanent art.
Yes, that's very true. The kolams, which are from southeastern part of India, is a tradition where Indian women, first thing in the morning before sunrise, make patterns or floor drawings in front of the main entrance of the home, creating a sacred space using rice flour, and they drop it with their fingertips. And these designs are meant to invoke the goddess of prosperity, but also create a sacred space that blesses those who leave and welcomes those who come. But because it's rice flour, made with rice flour, and being a tropical country, there are birds and insects that eat this all day. So it's also seen as a symbol of giving back to the earth for what we have taken, what we have received. And then the other, the Varli art is done by indigenous people who live in the northwestern, like about 149 kilometers from Bombay, which is a big city. But these people have lived in this particular area for thousands of years, and their paintings reflect their everyday life, which is one with nature. They live off of the land, but they use it only to as much as they should. They live in mud, not huts, but like their dwelling is made out of mud, and on the walls of this is what they make these paintings. And instead of doing mythological stories, they paint their everyday life. And they make these paintings not every day like in the southeastern part of India, like the women, but there they make it once, like because it's done with semi-permanent material, such as they paint the walls with cow dung or coal, charcoal, or earth, which gives it a red color, and paint with rice flour paste. These remain for longer, probably 5 to 6 months, and then they have to repaint the wall and create paintings all over again. So we brought these, and, you know, in their paintings, they are all inclusive of every single animal, creatures. They paint the way they live and, you know, and how they live with one with nature. So these are the two paintings, the forms of visual art that we were inspired by.
In the
so
case,
we brought this artist from India, and we had him in residence for 6 weeks before, you know, and he created these large scale paintings, which we photographed and then created video slides, and that's what we use in our production.
How does this all translate into dance then?
Well, you know, it is the idea, right? The idea is you make this design for what? For invoking the goddess of prosperity. In India, people believe that the act of hope, making a sacred space on the ground. So here we have our dancers. The show opens with me making a design on the floor with the rice flour, and our dancers are walking around, pouring rice from their hands, symbolic of giving back to the earth for what we have taken. So there is a piece in which they dance on the stage that is filled with rice flour, and the rice flour goes around, creating this magical look. And in one piece, the dancers dance on the floor, and as they keep moving, the other dancers dance on top of it, erasing it, because it shows that even in India, when you draw these designs, people walk on it, it blows away in the wind, showing that things of beauty are not permanent. You got to enjoy them while they last. And they are destroyed only for new ones to begin tomorrow. So all this is the inspiration that, you know, the dance is just in the music, and the dance is inspired from hymns that praise the goddess of prosperity, and then using the rice flour on the floor and using the slides of the various. I mean, if I can go back and say one more thing, so it's not just the floor drawings and the dance, but we interpret poetry that is 2,000 years old that describes the land as five landscapes. In those days, the poets saw the land as five landscapes, which is desert, farmland, mountain areas, forests, and seashore. And it describes the people who live there. And, you know, we talk today about local and what we have to do within what we get. But in these poetry, it shows the people's lives, what kind of plants grew there, what animals lived there, how did they live, the state of mind of each of these, of women who lived in those areas. So we use those five different landscapes, and the Varli paintings, actually, the artist has painted these landscapes within his paintings, and those are projected. And we have a mid-stage scrim. So the projections are projected onto that and to the backstage. So we use these as our set. So the dancers are behind it, in front of it. So so everything is about the earth and how and what we know, and through our dance, music, and poetry, we see the sacred in this earth.
And the style of dance is an adaptation of what you call Bharatanatyam?
Yes, it is. I mean, what we do is the vocabulary. Using the vocabulary of Bharatanatyam, we create, you know, because once you learn the vocabulary, you can make your own poetry. So we interpret the poems as well as rhythmic sections. There is a piece in here which is 15 minutes long that's inspired by the paintings of the Varli people. So there's constant movement, nonstop, from one end to the other. Dancers do abstract movement, and then they interpret some of the activities that are seen in the paintings. So Sacred Earth is a 70-minute piece, nonstop piece, that starts like a meditative hymn to the earth and ends with the brilliant pure dance movements, interpreting the Varli paintings.
Thank you.
And then how about the music? You have an orchestra that consists of, looks like, four people.
Yes.
A vocalist, very important, percussionist, yes. Violinist, and, second percussionist.
Yes. The interesting part is here we have, all our musicians are second-generation Americans. You know, we don't bring musicians from India, or these are young. The drummer is only 21 years old and born and raised in the United States. She has been playing since she was 8 years old, and a student of a disciple of a very famous drummer, from a percussionist from India. And she it's very, very rare to have female drummers. So she is a female drummer, and her sister, who's only 19, plays the violin. She too was born and raised here, but goes to India every year to learn from one of the, the best teacher of violin. And in the same way, but both my daughters are, second generation Americans, but they have been trained by, starting with me, but then we, all three of us, have been trained by a master in India. We spend 4 months a year. We used to. Now we are so busy, we don't have that time. And all our dancers are actually American, who have worked with me for over 18. Some of them have worked 18 years, 10 years, 12 years. But they're not Indian at all. But they do Indian classical dance beautifully. So in some ways, we are an American company doing Indian classical dance in its, in its highest, with the highest professional, in professionalism.
Did the young people involved in this production, did they typically come to the music and the traditional music and the dance, I almost wanted to use the word willingly, but I guess I mean early in their lives, where they became interested themselves, or did it come to them a little bit later that they got interested, and as they got interested, then they became more and more involved and ultimately highly proficient?
It's a very good question. For my daughter, Aparna, she just took to it, like she loved it from the time she was 3 years old. I never had to ask her to practice. I never had to ask her if she wanted to do it or if she didn't. It was like fish swimming in water. That's all she has known from the time she was a child, and she loves it, and she does it with such absolute beauty and perfection. My younger daughter, it's always a challenge when the mother and daughter are busy doing things. The younger daughter gets left out. But she actually started to learn, but couldn't keep that great discipline that was necessary for it in India. But then as she grew older, 12 years old, she saw the company members dancing, and she was more drawn to it because of the group. Whereas my older daughter wanted to be a soloist all her life. So she got into it, and now she's full-time. And the other American dancers who are dancing with us all joined, when I was doing workshops in colleges, they got a chance to try this and totally fell in love with the form, and they have joined us when they were 19. So it's all now they're so invested and involved in it. So each of us come from different backgrounds. The musicians, I think their parents have taken them to India from such a young age, and the parents are musicians also. So there is a second nature to them. The musicians all are in, some of them in colleges, some of them are still graduating, one of them is working, but they feel that this is such an important part of their life that they take time off and they travel with us and come to rehearsals, because it's not easy staying in different places and coming together. The dancers are all from Minneapolis, but the two sisters are from Maryland. Our vocalist is from Ohio. So, it takes a lot of effort to, and unless you love it and it's your passion, you're not going to give up, because it's not definitely a money-making job, if you call it profession. So I think one must have a lot of passion to continue doing this for so many years.
Well, it is certainly a beautiful art form, as I've seen many times in one form or another, and people can enjoy Ragamala dance in their program called Sacred Earth at the Krannert Center in Urbana on Wednesday evening at 7:30. The artistic director is Rani Ramaswamy, along with her daughter, Aparna, who I assume is the one who took to it quite quickly.
Yes.
And the younger daughter, Ashwini, also among the several dancers, plus the orchestra, plus the visuals of the paintings. And you can see, by the way, a demonstration of the kolam, which is the rice flour designs made on the floor, in the lobby of the Krannert Center at noon on Wednesday. And I have a demonstration of that happening, as well as in the event itself. Thank you very much for joining us here on Live and Local.
Well, thank you very much. It was very good questions, and I'm very happy to be part of it. Thank you. From Ragamala Dance in music that accompanies the show called Sacred Earth at the Krannert Center on Wednesday evening. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. You can see villages, castles, and manors from Masterpiece and Mystery and more in England and Wales for 14 days beginning September 27th. If American history appeals, board WYLL's Civil War train, private vintage train cars leaving for the southern battlefields with historian Anthony Pitch, September 7th. Information is at will.illinois.edu/willtravel or call 217-333-7300. Here are some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area, and I'm afraid this is not a very complete listing at the moment. We'll try to update that for tomorrow or Wednesday's show. The United States Navy Band is at Braden Auditorium on the Illinois State University campus in Normal tonight at 8 o'clock. The Eastern Steward Duo play jazz at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 7 o'clock. Megan Johns and Gloria Rubel perform at Clark Bar in Champaign tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. I have the Eastern Steward Duo also listed the Iron Post tomorrow evening at 7, and I wonder if that's in error. Not sure which day might be correct. John Miller and the Romantics play gypsy jazz at Rhythm Kitchen in Peoria Wednesday evening at 6:30. It's the traditional
Irish music session that happens weekly at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign, Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock. And Professor Elliot Chazanoff gives a trombone recital. He's faculty at the University of Illinois at Krannert Center in Urbana, Wednesday evening at 7:30. This is 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and more for Central Illinois. WYL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and we have support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. With wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer, wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. It'll be mostly cloudy and cool this afternoon with a high of 58 degrees. We're currently at 46 degrees at a minute past 1 o'clock.